Good afternoon. Welcome to January 28th House Committee on Water. Busy afternoon. The Urban Reuse Task Force report for us. Compliments of the... It sounds like the chair has erred in his... 25 cents goes in the kitty or whatever it is. I do have this thing turned off, but whenever company wants to turn it on, they turn it on.
Mr. Chair, if you were in the Democratic caucus, and
you
were
at caucus meeting,
it would be $20 in the pizza fund.
Oh, in the who fund?
Pizza.
Well, I don't eat pizza. I wouldn't join a caucus if it required me to eat pizza.
Some of us call it the beer fund, but...
Okay. Having done that, we are prepared with the to proceed with the task force. Have Holly Schroeder, the administrator for the Water Quality Division of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. She will introduce the panel, I'm told, which is Kim Anderson from Sunrise Water Authority, Mark Yeager from the City of Albany, and Charlie Logue, the Technical Service Manager, the Clean Water Services. And this is Representative Dingfelder's bill that we incorporated into this classic Senate Bill 820. I say classic Senate Bill 820 because this bill had a marvelous relating title, and we were able to take four good House bills and eliminate the one not-so-good Senate bill and move them forward under this umbrella. And one of those four bills was Representative Dingfelder's bill, and I would like to have her tell us a little about the bill and what we wanted to do and tried to do and how successful we were with it, and then we'll hear from the panel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate you allowing time out of our busy schedule to hear an update on this water reuse task force. And I wanted to say that Senate Bill 820 couldn't have passed without your help, so I certainly appreciate and your support. And that's that wonderful relating to water clause.
That's a wonderful clause.
Yes, wonderful. So I just wanted to, for some of the members who weren't on the committee last time, and I think Representative Schaffler was the only person that was there and supported it, and I appreciate that. But this was, I've been working on water conservation issues for about 20 years in my professional life, and this is near and dear to my heart, and found out that we actually in Oregon are sort of behind many other states as far as our work on water reuse at the state bureaucracy level, I should say. There's many people doing innovative work on water reuse, private and public folks both. But as far as the state taking a look at existing regulations or existing policies that sometimes are barriers to water reuse, that was the main intent of this bill and this task force. And what the bill did, Senate Bill 820, and I was just one quarter of that bill, and that portion of the bill created this task force that the Department of Environmental Quality staffed, and I really appreciate all the work that the DEQ staff did on this because we spent a year, I think it was 8 meetings, is that correct? I also really appreciate all the people who sat on the committee because they were not paid to do that. Some of them were paid staff members. Others were private sector folks that donated time. And I appreciate the agencies who let many of these folks sit on the committee. And I think we've come out with a really good report, a whole set of recommendations. And I'm going to ask the panel to come up because they're going to explain to you a little bit about the process and share with you the recommendations that we hope to move forward with. So I'm going to stop there, but that's just a little bit of background on the bill. And I really appreciate you all being here today to help share the findings with the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Here, Holly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Holly Schroeder. I'm the administrator of the Water Quality Division at the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and I want to thank you for having me here today. I'm going to do a brief overview of reuse and the work of the task force and their recommendations, and then we'll have some of the members of the task force come up and speak to you as part of your panel. And I also want to thank Representative Dingfelder for her leadership and participation in the task force. It wouldn't have gone as nearly as well without her cooperation. With me today is Mark Cullington, who is one of the managers in the Water Quality Division at DEQ. He worked on this task force and is very familiar with the topics, can answer any of the tough questions that you may want to ask. I believe I provided some testimony, and I will go through that briefly. Water reuse, as you know, is just what it sounds like. Water being used for a single purpose, gets treated, and then is ready and available for use again. There's a lot of benefits to reuse. It can be a conservation mechanism for expensive drinking water. It provides irrigation water when we might not have water appropriations available. And it can be an alternative to treating to discharging effluent into streams around the state where that might not be the best thing given the type of effluent and the type of uses that are in that stream, such as issues relating to temperature, where fish can be very sensitive to stream, and discharging to those streams can be difficult, but other uses might not be as sensitive to that, and so reuse can be a very viable option in those scenarios. We formed the task force in response to Senate Bill 820, as you know, and there's a list of the task force members in the report that you have a copy of. It's available on page 15, and I just want to go through some of the key findings and recommendations of the report. The bill instructed us basically to look at barriers and incentives to reuse and to identify some next steps. We identified barriers at a couple of levels. The first are barriers to agency policy interpretations. Another is regulations. And finally, economics can be a barrier to it. So I'd just like to run through those real quickly. And then I will talk about some of the incentives and talk about some of the recommendations. On agency rule interpretations, the difficulty that can occur is that different agencies can have different priorities, and you can get conflicting policies, and it can create uncertainty and ambiguity about project requirements. One of the things that the task force talked about to go overcome this barrier is to establish a state policy that could link water reuse with long-term water resource planning and conservation, and that's one of the key recommendations that ultimately came out. Another barrier that we're dealing with is our current regulations. They're somewhat outdated. Our current regulations were adopted in 1991. There have been a lot of developments in this field since then. And so as a result, there's a lack of differentiation between the standards that are the treatment standards that are required and the end uses that that reuse water can be used for. So when we originally adopted our reuse rules, they were aimed at human health and environmental protection for irrigation of things like grass and hay were the primary areas. And the time since that those rules were adopted, the treatment technology has improved and demand for water has increased, but we still have these same restrictions that we have for lower treated effluent may still apply to what is to much more highly treated effluent that is now available because of some of the developments in technology. So the report, one of the recommendations is to envision a process by which very highly treated water can be used for some uses such as toilet flushing or lawn watering, landscape irrigation, laundry washing types of activities because it's very highly treated, and you would have lower levels of treatment for other types of uses where that is a more appropriate. So trying to kind of balance and mix and match the treatment standards and the uses. The task force also took a look at incentives. And so we looked at some financial incentives. We looked at regulatory activities and conservation incentives. We have a number of programs to provide some financial incentives. DEQ administers a pollution control tax credit program. In addition, we have the state revolving loan program, which provides very low interest loans to municipalities that are interested in doing the infrastructure investments to facilitate reuse. Again, one of the regulatory changes that the task force envisioned as an incentive was better matching the treatment standards and the end uses in order to that creating that better match, making the regulatory changes in order to do that would facilitate future projects on that. There's also some opportunities under existing rules. For example, the Water Resources Division has some rules that require municipalities to, when they don't have their water rights and need an extension in time for their water rights, they have to do a water conservation management plan, and we can probably expand our opportunities of using that planning opportunity to explore reuse to a greater extent. One of the contentious areas that the group talked about was gray water. Probably nothing was quite as debated as that issue. Gray water in Oregon is water from residents, toilet water, sinks, showers. And in Oregon, those are all defined as sewage in both statute and in administrative rule. But there are a lot of homeowners who are interested in using gray water for other purposes, watering their lawns or gardens. And that's a practice that is allowable in states of Arizona and California. So there's a certain amount of interest in seeing that be expanded here in Oregon. There are some concerns with that. It can contain high bacteria levels and chemicals that could accumulate, and the task force essentially deferred on this issue, saying that we need to do a little bit more research. And I think one of the final issues that was very much considered in the task force that's very important is the public perception issue. Oregonians really care about their water, care about their drinking water, and they would view anything that other than the absolute highest treatment as being less than acceptable, or at least would view it with a certain level of suspicion. And so the people have a tendency to demand very high levels of treatment, which of course has a cost aspect and treatment and infrastructure components to it. And so there's issues around that in trying to advance reuse within the state. The task force concluded by having a set of recommendations, which are on the final, they're summarized in the executive summary of the report and the final two pages of my testimony. The first was that there's a recommendation that there be a clear state policy, that it is the policy of the state to promote reuse in a manner that's protective of human health and the environment as a uniting method for bringing state agencies together. The task force recommended that there be an improved coordination among the agencies that are involved in this issue, and that we are developing some guidance both for working within agencies as well as providing some guidance and what the task force called a best management practices manual that would provide examples and templates for how projects have successfully moved through the regulatory process. As part of that, there's a recommendation about regulatory streamlining in order to, again, match the treatment standards and the end uses. This is probably something that can be done largely through a revision to DEQ rules, and is something that we are actively looking at. And finally, there can be some pilot projects relating to gray water that should be encouraged. Overall, I would say that the task force worked together really, really well. I think I was very pleased with their work and their outcome, and it's been a really valuable learning exercise for DEQ as well as for, I think, the other agencies and everyone involved. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. Mr. Chair, as you indicated, there are members of the task force here, and I know you want to hear from them, and so I will leave it to your discretion as to how you'd like to proceed.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Representative Brown.
Yeah. Was there a discussion of reuse of stormwater runoff, particularly from urban areas?
For the record, my name is Mark Covington. Representative Brown, through the chair, yes, there was some discussion about stormwater and perhaps its application and reuse. And your second question, can you please repeat?
Well, my second question I hadn't said yet, but who has the right to stormwater runoff? Who's it belong to? Before it goes in the stream, if someone's to capture it, who has the right to it?
That would be the source of the stormwater. So, for example, if it was the stormwater was from a municipal facility, if you will, a school or perhaps a parking lot of a wastewater treatment plant, that would be the municipality itself. Or in the case of, let's say, a large retailer, a parking lot of a large retailer, it would be the owner or manager of that retail outfit.
And so a city, as its stormwater system's gathering the water that's running off in the streets and the parking lots and all those, that would belong to the city then?
Once the water is then contained in those type of stormwater collection systems, ultimately would go typically to a wastewater treatment plant. It would be become under the management umbrella of the wastewater treatment plant, which is typically city-owned.
I didn't think not necessarily goes into a wastewater treatment plant.
That's correct.
Because a lot of storm runoff, I know, in my own home city is separate from that and doesn't go to the...
That's correct, Representative Brown, Mr. Chair. In many cities, the stormwater is collected in a separate system, but I think the same principle that Mark is describing would apply, and that the city would then sort of be the manager of that water and would sort of have say over the...
Do you know if that's a documented water right?
I would refer to my colleagues in Water Resources.
All right, thank you.
Go ahead, Paul.
Tom Paul also sat on the committee. We had four state agencies, the DEQ, Water Resources Department, Department of Human Services, and we had the plumbing codes folks from DCBS, so I really appreciate all the work of the agencies, including Mr. Paul, who is very helpful.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Tom Paul, Oregon Water Resources Department. Representative Brown, in Oregon water law statute, it specifically states that waters that are collected off of impervious surfaces are not waters of the public unless you lose control of those and they do flow off and enter a public waterway. But the landowner can collect that water off of the impervious surface and then use it for beneficial use without having to file a water right for that.
And, Mr. Chair, if I may?
Representing.
Is that the same for rainwater collection as well?
It would be rainwater, precipitation, snowmelt. Any water that hits an impervious surface like that can be collected by the owner of that surface, or in the case of a city, they can collect that through their stormwater collection system as well.
But just for clarification, if somebody has a cistern, follow-up, sir. If somebody has a cistern, they wouldn't need to get a water right from you to use that water. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelter, if they collect the water into a cistern and that water is collected off of an impervious surface, they would not need a water right then to put that to a secondary use.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
Representative Chair. Got it? Okay. Thank you.
I think somebody else has a question.
Question? Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me what the total cost of putting together the task force and running this program to make this report was during the interim?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I don't have that with me today, but that's certainly information that we can gather. As Representative Dingfelter indicated, we held, I think, between 6 and 8 meetings that were part-day meetings, and we can certainly provide some information for you on that if you'd like that as a follow-up.
Does anybody, does anybody happen to know, whether you're on the committee or anywhere, happen to know what the amount appropriated for this was when we passed Senate Bill 820?
Mr. Chair, should I respond to that?
Fine. Representative Dingfelter.
I had many conversations with the agencies prior to passage of this bill, and since water reuse is already part of the DEQ and Water Resources Department, all those four agencies' purview, it was incorporated into their existing budget. Regarding facilitation, the facilitator that we had donated her time. That was the executive director of AQUA, which is the Association of Clean Water Agencies. And pretty much we had everything else that was donated time, including research that was done by some of the members of the committee.
Okay, thank you. I just find it kind of interesting, Mr. Chair, that we had to set up a task force to do this. I grew up in a community that had a water reclamation plant over in southeastern Washington, and the water came out of it so clean that you could drink it. And I know because on a field trip when I was in elementary school, I remember the superintendent of a plant taking the glass and holding it under the outfall and drinking the water. So water reclamation has been around for, well, I'm getting up there, and I'm not that old, but I know it's been around for at least 45 or 50 years, and so I find it incredible that we had to do a task force to come up with the idea and to come up with recommendations that yes, indeed, water can be reused and that it can be reclaimed, when in fact we've known that for years that it can be reused. And so, why in the hell don't we do it, or is it because of our own bureaucracy is standing in our way?
Representative Crummell, if I can follow a little bit with that. I share some of your concerns, some of your interest in this. I give for, as far as water reuse is concerned, I give for you an example of a number of concrete structures across the Columbia River and other rivers in this state where, you got the water, you use it, you send it on down the river, you reuse it, you send it on down the river, you reuse it. And I didn't even see the task force taking that particular topic up, Representative Dingvoter.
Mr. Chair, if I can respond, we had limited our discussions to the urban areas, which actually was an interesting part of the discussion because one of the recommendations that came out of the committee was that we should look at other, obviously, and also agricultural purposes. And to try to respond to Representative Crummell's comment, there actually is a lot of barriers with public perception and application of effluent. And if, what was the Senate bill number from the 99 or 2001 session? We had heated discussion about application of effluent on agricultural lands.
Senate Bill 212.
Where actually there are many, many issues with application of reclaimed water in the state, and part of it is the perception, just as we have heard with concern about fluoride in the water. But part of what you brought up is absolutely true. What we find is that it's not that we can't do it, it's that there are barriers within our existing statutes and existing administrative rules that, because of the way, as Ms. Schroeder from DEQ explained, they were set up not with water reuse in mind, and so it actually acts as a barrier to actually get any of these projects implemented because it is so hard to get the permits in the first place. So what we're trying to do is actually streamline and make it easier for cities or counties or developers that actually want to do this work, figure out how we can get it done in a more expedited fashion. So we're hoping in the long run to actually save money by consolidating, if possible, a permitting process, making sure that a private sector individual, and we had asked one of the developers to come here today and talk about that, doesn't have to go through multiple agency reviews and many, many months of review in order to get their projects on the ground. So that was part of the intent. Certainly, I think most people know that reusing water is a good thing, and that I wouldn't say is a new conclusion, but it's how we can get it done in a more efficient manner here in Oregon. And we are actually way behind many other western states in the application here in Oregon, water reuse.
Representative Troffner.
Thank you. And I want to just commend the good representative from Portland for all her hard work on this. And I kind of want to, you know, maybe cause a little commotion here today too, because if a municipality can claim a right to an water that's captured on an impervious surface, or if we could throw in structure there, I'd imagine those concrete structures up the river are impervious, and maybe they ought to, those nice folks up the river ought to capture some of that water so they can use it for more beneficial use. And if the chair is going in that direction, I would gladly lend my support to that.
Thank you.
I expect this committee task force is not prepared to deal with that topic. We'll save that one for another time. With that, our apologies for delaying or interrupting your presentations. Please proceed.
Is there another?
Representative Barnhart, did you have a question?
I'm ready to go ahead.
Oh.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, with that, I would like to bring up some of the members of the task force. As you've indicated, Charlie Logue from Clean Water Services, Mark Yeager from City of Albany, and Kim Anderson from Sunrise Water Authority. Thank you.
You mean we haven't scared them out yet?
It appears they're still here. Thank you.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
I'm sorry?
Did that answer your question?
No, did it answer my question?
We're on the record, you know.
Yeah, it's fine. I just find it rather interesting, Mr. Chair, that, you know, we pride ourselves on being this highly sophisticated environmental state, and yet we've created the bureaucracy that puts the barriers in place that communities can't reuse their water, and I think it's absolutely ludicrous.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good afternoon. Welcome. We appreciate you being here. Who's leading off?
I guess they said ladies first.
They've delegated you to.
Okay. I'm Kim Please. Anderson. I'm with Sunrise Water Authority. We're the municipal water provider for the Happy Valley and newly incorporated city of Damascus, as well as some other unincorporated areas in Clackamas County. We serve a population of approximately 35,000 right now, which is close to 10,900 service connections, and they're mostly residential in nature. Right now, the peak demand on our system is just over 11 million gallons a day. When Metro expanded the urban growth boundary by 18,638 acres, the vast majority of that fell into our jurisdiction or into areas that are covered by our master plan. That decision is to add 38,657 residential units, which is roughly equivalent to about 80,000 people in population, as well as all of the attendant job opportunities that Clackamas County is pinning their hopes on that area to provide to correct the jobs imbalance that occurs in Clackamas County. Based on all of that, we're looking at a peak demand of approximately 65 million gallons a day, which is a shortfall of about 45 million gallons. That's kind of a hefty number to come up with. In light of all that, Sunrise has been compelled to carefully consider all of the supply options that are available to us. Surface water sources are currently available to supply about 20 million gallons of that potential demand. However, surface water resources have severe limitations based on largely, it's ESA, it's no longer, they changed it, NOAA. Requirements regarding salmonids and construction and waterways. It's pretty prohibitive at this point to develop those. The increased urbanization and its attendant proliferation of impermeable surfaces also threatens the ability of the watersheds that supply the Clackamas River to hold and release its burden of water in its historic patterns. What we need to do now is we need to really consider how best we can fully utilize those resources that are available to us. In light of that, we have at Sunrise developed a water supply matrix that identifies conservation as a pivotal role, but we realize that it won't do it on its own. So another increment of supply that we're considering is reclaimed water, and we're looking to use that for about 10% of our future supply. And Sunrise has a unique opportunity. We are in that area that is basically developing an urban entity from basically below ground up. There's nothing out there right now. What it allows us to do is that we can look at reclaimed water in as a cost-effective alternative. We're not retrofitting anything. We're putting it in as we go. So it looks cost-effective at this point, but the more we look at it, the more concerned we become because of the regulations that are in place right now. Excuse me. Without adjustments to the regulations regarding the prescriptive regulations that mandate the type of treatment that is used to create class 4 water, we're probably stopped right before we even get out of the blocks. Our sewerage agency in Clackamas County is Water Environmental Services, and it is a county agency. They have taken a look at the reclaimed water regulations and are unwilling to consider partnering with us because of the prescription of type of treatment to create class 4 water. It's an obsolete technology and they won't even consider going there. So we're stopped before we even get started right out of the blocks. There's also some considerations in terms of the construction mandates. 10-foot horizontal separation on installing pipelines. That means we're back in the roads putting in two trenches instead of putting them down one trench. Increases the construction cost, adds on to the cost of whether or not it's feasible to do reclaimed water. Seems a little bit unnecessary considering class 4 water is supposed to be and will be in our particular scenario treated drinking water standards. It's unnecessary regulation. There's also considerations in the ease of implementing each new increment of supply that Sunrise considers. The regulation regarding the end user enforceable contracts for the use of reclaimed water and the public posting requirements for reclaimed water almost guarantee a complex and contentious process for implementation of a reclaimed water system. You have to understand that the water industry is very conservative. Whatever industries are out there, we're probably 20 years behind it. For a board of directors of a water agency to consider implementing something that is going to raise a hue and cry before you even get it in the ground is not good. Let's just say that. The other problem with those agreements is that in the traditional patterns of reclaimed water, you're usually delivering reclaimed water to very minimal number of end users. You're talking about an industrial or a very limited number of industrial or agricultural users. In the system that Sunrise envisions, we're going to be delivering this basically throughout the system, and it would be available for use at residential, industrial, institutional. All levels of consumers would have access to the water. Administering that many end-use agreements, which have an attendant plan for application attached to it, it's an administrative nightmare that I don't think that we would be willing to undertake. Especially when you start considering that that adds back to the cost of implementing reclaimed water. The other thing that we looked at when we started going this route is that we started conversing with the agencies that have put in place reclaimed water systems, and quite frankly, the results were not encouraging. We heard story after story of conflicting instructions from different agencies, interpretations of rules that varied from person to person, and you'd have one staff person today and one staff person tomorrow, and they'd have different directions to go. And again, going back to that risk-averse nature of water boards, if the people that are administering the programs can't even agree, it's almost guaranteed to cause cost overruns in the long run because we're going to have to be switching back and forth to try and deal with these people. It's not an encouraging situation to go into trying to do something as extensive as what Sunrise is looking at and not even being sure how it's going to come out.
Mr. Sherrick, may I ask a question? Yeah. Thank you. I just wanted to see if you can explain for the committee how, because you served on the task force and was really very helpful because you brought real life sort of issues to the committee, how the recommendations could help you. I think that would be helpful since the committee seem, you know, they don't sort of have the full grasp of what some of the challenges are. And it's like, why can't we do this right now? So maybe you can just talk a little bit about the task force and how some of those recommendations you support or not that could possibly help you.
Sure, absolutely. A lot of the recommendations coming out of the task force had to do with rewriting regulations that were creating barriers for us. And the ones that I just listed were just a few of the concerns we had. But I think what it boils down to in the terms of Sunrise Water Authority is that while reclamation is a very attractive option, and we are definitely considering pursuing it with a risk-averse nature of the boards, all of these impediments taken as a group tend to, in light of the ease of application of the other options, basically water industry knows how to go out, get another water right, put another intake structure on our river, and just build a treatment plant. We know how to do that. We're entering unknown territory for the Pacific Northwest, and what we're seeing is that we don't know how to proceed because the regulations are unclear on what we can and can't do.
So if I may, Mr. Chair, so what you're saying is that you have a ready resource available to you because obviously you don't have enough water rights, surface water rights, in order to meet your demand.
That's correct?
That's correct. That what I'm trying to make sure I'm understanding is you're saying that you have a ready resource in this reclaimed water, but it was more difficult for you to actually go through the permitting process and construct and build that option versus trying to get a new water right if that was available.
We don't know. That's, I think, is what it comes down to, is we don't know, and we're willing to find out, but we need some help in order to give us some guidance to get there.
Thank you.
And that's, first of all, I want to say Sunrise Water Authority provides excellent product at very reasonable rates, largely due to the great work of the Budget Committee.
Thank you.
I confess I'm on the Budget Committee. It is true. We get great water at reasonable rates. That's what I wanted to get to specifically. What rules, regulations, statutes, do you have a list of changes specifically that we could somehow help you get to where you and other districts, I imagine, want to go this session?
We're working on that. Our partner in this endeavor would be Water Environment Services, and we're actually in the process right now trying to negotiate an IGA that would fund a detailed study of the feasibility of implementing reclaimed water as a resource for Sunrise Water Authority. That is in process right now, and one of the work products in the scope would be a detailed analysis of that. Obviously, I'm going to be handing them the task force report as a starting point to go from there.
And Mr. Chair, if I may make a comment on it, that's part of the problem. I mean, we shouldn't have every water district who wants to go through this have to go through this onerous process in order to leap over, you know, state agency regulation hurdles. And that was part of the intent of the task force, is to try to figure out what are these barriers, how can we get agencies to sit down and work together. Maybe we need to do a few pilot projects so we can show this can be done, and maybe we need to rethink streamlining our permitting process to still protect the environment and public health, but try to provide greater access to water reuse as a resource to water providers that want to look to that.
That was a very significant incentive to my participation on the task force, was that my board heard what was going on and thought, aha, solution to the problem. Hopefully it'll come out of this group. We need somebody there.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Next.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Charles Logue, and I'm the Director of Technical Services with the Clean Water Services in Washington County. I'd also like to thank the committee for the opportunity to appear, talk to you about water reuse, and support the recommendations of the Water Reuse Task Force before you today. Just to let you know who and what we are, Clean Water Services used to be called, up until 3 years ago, Unified Sewerage Agency. We changed our name because sewerage isn't one of those things that most people like to even talk about. But we're the Water Resources Management Utility, providing sanitary sewer, stormwater, and surface water management for nearly 500,000 people in Washington County. We operate 4 wastewater treatment facilities and clean about 60 million gallons of wastewater each and every day. We have 2 of our staff members, Steve Kibbe and Deborah Gorman, participate in this task force. Well, Clean Water Services has had a successful reuse program in place for nearly 30 years, as the vice chair had indicated. It's been around for some period of time. Currently, we provide about 100 million gallons of reclaimed water each summer for reuse to meet the irrigation needs of some of our customers near Durham Wastewater Treatment Plant. This high-quality reclaimed water provides a safe and reliable, sustainable water source meets our customers' needs, and they can count on it. Our program currently meets 100% of the irrigation needs of more than 210 acres of property in Durham and the Tigard area. These include athletic fields, the 48 acres of athletic fields at Tigard High School, 2.5 acres of soccer fields at the Durham Elementary School, 9 acres of soccer fields and turf grass at the Tiger Cook Park, and more than 150 acres of fairways, greens, and tee boxes at both the Tualatin Country Club and the King City Golf Courses. In addition, Clean Water Services has implemented a stormwater reuse program, and in response to Representative Brown's question, in our new administration building in Hillsboro, we're collecting rainwater from the roof of our facility, and we use that to flush the toilets in the building. And it reduces our water use by more than 65% over the conventionally plumbed facility. And I might say I'm glad to know that we didn't violate any laws by not getting a water right for that. So. This not only reduces our demand on the municipal water system, it keeps more water in stream for other needs, and it also reduces our stormwater management requirements. As logical as this may sound from the discussion earlier, obtaining all these various approvals and permits was very difficult and highlights the need for a clear and coherent state policy and encouragement on this. At Clean Water Services, these are just a few of the examples that we've been working on and working to implement a comprehensive integrated water resources management strategy in the Tualatin River watershed. We're trying to take a holistic approach to leverage all our water resources and to make sure that we match the appropriate water quality to the specific resource need or requirements. We're currently in the midst of updating our reclaimed water master plan as part of our MPDS permit requirements. We are looking for additional opportunities for reuse of reclaimed water that better align the use of the water with the actual water quality needs of both the end user and also the overall watershed health objectives we're trying to achieve. That is, keeping the cooler natural flows in the stream and the use of reclaimed water for certain irrigation industrial needs. As the others here said this afternoon, reuse of reclaimed water is becoming an increasingly important tool for balancing Oregon's water needs as with its water resources. A successful reuse program can leverage the state's overall water quality objectives, can meet the needs and growing challenges of cities, agriculture, industry, and at the same time continue to ensure adequate in-stream flows for fish and other aquatic organisms. At Clean Water Services, we've moved beyond, you know, how do we get rid of this wastewater, to what gives the best use of that important water resource. I don't think it's appropriate any longer that we continue to say it's waste. It's not a waste. One of the, as a, just a kind of a sideline, you know, when you treat reclaimed water as hazardous waste and you regulate it as hazardous waste, that's one of the impediments that we need to get past. It's not as bad as it can be or as it's perceived to be. In closing, I'd just like to commend the committee and the legislature for examining this very important issue and encourage you to continue to provide leadership and support for the broader reuse of reclaimed water in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Question? Mr. Yeager.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Yeager, and I'm the principal utilities engineer for the City of Albany. Thank you also for the opportunity to appear before the committee today to talk about water reuse. I was a member of the reuse task force, and I support its recommendations, the report that you received today here at this meeting. In my role with the city, I am responsible for both drinking water supply issues and water quality issues, including wastewater treatment. As our community grows, sufficient water supplies must be available to meet the increasing demands for residential, commercial, and industrial uses. At the same time, standards for discharge of treated wastewater are becoming more stringent, particularly for water bodies that are water quality limited. Oregon communities, industries, and farms need water for irrigation, processed and cooling water, and for drinking water. While the urban demands are significant, municipal and industrial uses make up only about 20% of the total water used in the state. In most places in Oregon, surface water supplies are fully appropriated during the critical times of the year, and I might add, in some drought seasons like we're likely to experience this year as we continue to have not much rain. And there's no unallocated surface water available to meet the state's growing demand for water. It is incumbent upon all users to efficiently use the water that's being withdrawn from water sources. And efficient water use includes not only conservation measures, but also reuse of treated wastewater. Recycled water is an important source of supply that can be used for many purposes. Substituting recycled water for water withdrawals can keep water in streams during critical times, and it can be a resource to allow existing businesses to stay and grow or to attract new economic development opportunities. Albany, which has a service population of about 45,000 people, is in the process of expanding and upgrading its wastewater treatment facilities. We are increasing the capacity of our treatment facilities, adding new treatment technologies, and seeking innovative ways to meet our environmental goals. As part of this nearly $60 million investment, a reuse feasibility study is being prepared, and we are considering partnerships with local industries and agricultural for use of recycled water. Through these partnerships, we hope to strengthen our local economy while improving the water quality of the Willamette River. However, to make these partnerships a reality, water reuse needs to be viewed as the preferred way of doing business in Oregon, not a second thought. There's not enough water to meet all of Oregon's needs today, and the state continues to grow. Water reuse is one way that we can help meet those growing demands. So what can you do? Your committee has the opportunity to move this important issue forward by proposing a clear statewide policy promoting water reuse and by directing the state agencies to update their regulations to encourage the environmentally sound reuse of water. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I'm available to answer any questions you might have.
Questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your time, the effort you put in on the task force, the work that you've done, and your presentation back to us.
Thank you.
Did you have anything in conclusion, Representative, you'd like to add?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do want to thank all the members that came here today to talk about their experience on the committee and support the recommendations. I did want to mention that Willie Tiffany from the League of Oregon Cities couldn't be here today. He's picking up his fiance from the airport. But the League of Oregon Cities fully supports the recommendations in the report, and he wanted that to be on the record. But I am working closely with the governor's office to look at ways that we can continue this discussion or dialogue amongst the agencies to make sure that some of the recommendations in the report, or I should say all the recommendations in the report, are implemented. And at this point, I don't have specific statutory language. What we have decided to do is put together possibly a policy that the governor's office could put forward to be adopted by the agencies, and we will see if down the road we need some additional statutory language, but at this point we're going to proceed trying to work through the updating of the administrative rules and continuing discussion among the agencies, which was one of the biggest barriers, is that we have many more than four different agencies regulating and oversight for water use in the state, as we all well know. But just starting that dialogue, I think, has been really helpful. And I will say that one of the most positive things that has come up in the past few weeks is we now have approval of waterless urinals in the state, which was a topic of discussion in our task force, which actually will save, I think it's, 3.6 million gallons per day for the Park Service, I think it was.
May I add, about 20,000 gallons.
Come up, Mark, and just identify yourself for the record.
Right.
for the record, this is Mark Cohington from DEQ. To answer your question, Representative Dingfelder through the chair, waterless urinals can save approximately 20,000 gallons per urinal per year.
This may not sound very exciting to all of you around here, but cumulatively, and I can't say that I speak from experience, but cumulatively, we can talk about saving a lot of money just with some very simple techniques such as that. So I will continue to keep the committee members updated on this, and certainly will work closely with the chair as we move forward. And I very much appreciate the indulgence of the chair on this issue and his support every step of the way.
Thank you. Representative Beinhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if Representative Dingfelder might be willing to answer a question, and I'll tell you the question before you decide.
I'll try.
It sounds as though there are issues in statute. There are issues around the fact that we have divided up jurisdiction among a whole bunch of different agencies and perhaps some obsolete administrative rules. Is there a primary area? Is there a place where this committee can really plug in to all of that? Or is it too complex at this point to tell?
That's an excellent question, Representative Barnhart, and I appreciate that, because one of the things I will be doing, and it would certainly be helpful to have the agency, it's actually mostly through administrative rules where we find the barriers, and to have the agencies report back to us on a regular basis on how they're trying to update their regulations and work through those barriers, I think would be very helpful. And talking about the continuation of, we have been talking about the continuation of some type of working group to make sure that the recommendations move forward. And all the recommendations that were laid out are things that can be done without statutory requirements at this point. And developing a best management practices manual, we've talked about contacting US EPA to see if we can get a grant to do that so it wouldn't cost the state additional dollars. Looking at developing new policies, having a guidance document, again, we would probably look at grant dollars to try to do that. Many of these things are already within the purview of our existing agencies, but you have highlighted part of the problems and frustrations that people like Representative Jensen and I, who have been working on water issues for many years, find frustrating, is that we have the requirement to regulate water rights, water quality, the health of for drinking water, plumbing codes spread over a myriad of different agencies. And I believe that we should seriously look at some point, either a consolidation or some type of regular coordinating work group to try to facilitate some of these issues. And water reuse was just one example of an issue that transcended several agency regulatory purviews. So there are other issues where different agencies are involved, such as beneficial uses, as both the Water Resources Department and DEQ. And you will learn, sitting on a water committee, that that's part of the challenges we face.
Well, if I could just comment, I suspect if you continue using the C word, consolidation, you will find that agencies are anxious to work together to reduce the thicket.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you want to add anything.
No, that's fine. I think we're probably prepared to move on.
Yeah.
This was listed as an informational meeting as far as urban water reuse task force report. As a consequence, staff did not have a sign-up sheet out there for public testimony on this. I think it is maybe important to ask before we move on if there's anyone in the audience who would like to comment on this particular topic at this time. Seeing none, then we'll move on to and open the public hearing portion of the session. And the first public hearing we have scheduled is House Bill 2083, and we have Adam Sussman from the We have Adam Sussman from the Water Resource Department to begin our discussion on that, and we will with this open the public hearing on House Bill 2083.
Good afternoon, Chair Jensen and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Adam Sussman. I'm with the Oregon Department of Water Resources. And I think that last presentation was great for many reasons, and it was a great setup for me to come talk to you about House Bill 2083, where the Water Resources Department wanted to lessen the thicket, I believe, is how it was described. House Bill 2083 was developed by the Water Resource Department and was introduced by the governor on behalf of the department and the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. And there is a representative from that office that will probably want to speak to this bill as well. What the Water Resources Department is attempting to accomplish with House Bill 2083 is we have scoured the statutes and found a number of existing statutory provisions that one could term as burdensome or obsolete and frankly don't add any value to the department's mandate to protect existing water rights and manage the state's water resources. So with that, we have three regulations that we're proposing to eliminate in this bill, and I'll just jump right to them, Mr. Chair. In Section 1 of the bill is something regarding seller notification. And under current law, when a seller is selling a property, they need to notify the buyer that there are water rights included in that transaction for good reason. But there's also a requirement under current law that requires the seller to provide a piece of paper to the Water Resources Department indicating that this transaction took place and it involved a water right. And the problem really is that just this adds unnecessary paperwork to a real estate transaction, because what happens is oftentimes people don't comply with the provision, so the department doesn't get the information. Secondly, it's often not reliable because I think folks simply don't understand what it is we're asking them for, and often we find that they're giving us their forwarding address in Arizona. And thirdly, there's really much more simple and accurate ways to find the current ownership of a piece of property if, in fact, the department or anybody needs to do that, and that is through each county assessor's database, many of which are online, and certainly all the tax lot information is online. So we're proposing to eliminate that portion of ORS 537-330 sub 2, which is in Section 1 of the bill. The rest of the action in House Bill 2083 is in Section 4 of the bill. And when you look at Section 4, it really doesn't give you very much information other than a whole list of statutes. And so what I've done for the committee is I've attached those statutes that are being eliminated if you were curious what they looked like. And the first list of statutes, all the way 537.015, all the way through 537.032, is the first one I'll talk about. Those are all basically the same program.
Mr. Chair, also in addition, thank you, Adam. I did the same thing. That's what I put the black mark through on the statute, or the ones that are being repealed, just on the attachment that was at the dais when you came in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, continuing, Mr. Chair, 537.015 through 537.032, again, is one program, and it has to do with the registration of water uses for stream restoration, riparian restoration, and stormwater management. And let me tell you why we're proposing to repeal those provisions. This was a great idea in its time in the early 1990s, when the Water Resources Department had a pretty significant backlog of water right applications. And the problem is that no applications were moving, not even ones that people may deem to be of some higher public value or of some public value. And so the legislature at that time created this process where you could register certain types of uses and go ahead and continue the use while your permit application was being processed. And it seemed like a great idea, and it was at the time. But since then, a lot of things have happened. Probably the most significant one is that the department's eliminated its permit backlog. We have statutory timelines for processing applications now, and we have new tools for processing applications or uses such as these, one called a limited license and another one which is an alternative process for expediting small reservoirs. So because of these new tools and the passage of time, this whole program essentially is obsolete, and we're proposing to eliminate it from the statutes. The third provision that we're proposing to eliminate, again, is at the very end of that list of statutes in Section 4. That would be 537.788. And the reason we're proposing to eliminate it is this, is that since 1993, there's been a program that requires the placement of an identification tag on any new well that's been drilled or on any well that is involved in a property transfer. The reason for that number is it creates a unique identifier for that well, which is very important for our ability to manage the state's groundwater in terms of locating the well and matching it to the well construction report, which tells us about the construction of that well. But there was a second part of that statute that required the landowner to record that identification number on the deed records. And this is very expensive in some counties for the landowner. There's no requirement that they do it in the first place. It requires a lot of paper handling by the applicants and the department, and frankly, it does not provide any value in terms of the department's management of the state's water resources or protection of existing water users. And that's the third and final provision that House Bill 2083 proposes to eliminate. I did want to add, Mr. Chair, that we have shared this concept with our stakeholders and find general support. We're not aware of any opposition to this bill. And Harlan Levy from the Oregon Association of Realtors called me and wanted me to pass on to the chair and the committee that his organization does fully support House Bill 2083. Thank you.
Are there questions? House Bill 2083. From Adam. Let's see. I have Patrick Allen from the Office of Regulatory Streamlining.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, just very briefly, my name is Pat Allen. I manage the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, which was created at the Department of Consumer and Business Services by the governor to help make business regulations faster, simpler, cheaper, easier to comply with while maintaining protections for consumers, workers, public safety, health, the environment, and those kinds of things. I'm here today briefly. We're a co-requester of this bill and obviously want to speak in support of it. I wanted to point out for you, I think this is the first streamlining bill this committee is getting this session. I wanted to take that opportunity to provide you a copy of the full package of streamlining bills that are before the legislature. It's about 36 bills, each of which makes some kind of a change that we believe improves the state's regulatory process and systems. Many of them are significant changes. A lot of them, like this bill, are not in and of themselves huge changes in public policy, but by virtue of making lots of small improvements to systems, we think we can improve the state's regulations and regulatory systems. Just wanted to take the opportunity to introduce that package to you and ask your positive consideration of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate your bringing us that information. Hearing no other comments or interests on House Bill 2083, we'll close public hearing on House Bill 2083 and open our public hearing on House Bill 2123. And once again, Mr. Sussman, come back and we've got some more paper for us to
okay.
again for the record.
Good afternoon, and again for the record, my name is Adam Sussman. I'm with the Oregon Department of Water Resources. My brief written testimony is being passed around. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2123. This bill is really important for the department and the state in terms of providing tools to help meet Oregon's long-term water supply needs. And one of the ways, one of the important ways that we can do that is to modify existing water uses. And as we talked about in my first appearance before the committee, we do that generally through water right transfers. What House Bill 2123 does is it actually modifies the statutes in three ways to facilitate the kinds of changes to water rights that are necessary. And these are all facilitated through this bill without diminishing protection of our existing water rights in the state of Oregon and the state's water resources. So again, Mr. Chair, I'd like to walk the committee through the three changes here, perhaps by section of the bill. And in section one of House Bill 2123, this has to do with groundwater registrations. And as we've talked about in the committee before, Oregon's groundwater code was not adopted until 1955. And uses of groundwater prior to 1955 had an opportunity to come to the department and register their use and receive what's called a certificate of registration. And I remind the committee that these certificates of registration are not any sort of final determination of their use. In fact, that needs to be determined by the court after the department goes through some adjudication process. It would not be an
Would you repeat that for me, Adam? I'm not sure that I'm following.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair. The certificate of registration is not a final determination of the use of the groundwater that's been claimed.
This is pre-1955.
Pre-1955, yes. That those uses need to be, the department will adjudicate those claims at some time in the future, and after that administrative process, the circuit court would issue a decree, and the department would ultimately issue a water rights certificate.
In keeping with the first in time, principle in Western water law, wouldn't the pre-codes have something of a priority?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the statute actually lays out that once the certificate is ultimately issued, the priority date would be the date that the well was constructed. Before that time, the way the department operates with these unadjudicated claims, as you will, is that we don't regulate for them, but we also don't regulate against them. And so in some ways they have a very high priority in terms of the water use system.
That's in 2123.
I'm sorry?
Is that in 2123?
No, House Bill 2123 doesn't affect that system at all. In fact, Mr. Chair, what 2123 does in terms of the groundwater registrations is simply provides the Water Resources Commission the authority to recognize and allow some modification to that claim. It would not be an understatement to say that it may be many years before the department gets to adjudicating the 4,000 claims that it has in front of it. And while that time passes, things happen, development occurs, wells collapse, and under existing law right now, there's absolutely no mechanism to modify those claims. And so again, what this statute would do is give our commission that authority. The Water Resource Commission has that authority for surface water claims right now, and that's in ORS Chapter 539, and in fact, the commission has rules that implement that statute, and any rules that were passed to implement this bill similarly would ensure that those modifications to the groundwater registrations protect existing water rights and don't allow expansion of the claim as it exists. So that's really in Section 1 of House Bill 2123, groundwater registrations. In Section 2 of the bill, there is, under current law, the opportunity to transfer a surface water right to the use of groundwater. And the statute that allows that is very narrow and very prescriptive. And unfortunately, part of the prescriptive nature of this statute has caused some unintended consequences, because the statute says that if you make this kind of transfer from surface water to groundwater, the groundwater must come from an unconfined aquifer. So that would be sort of a gravelly aquifer that has a very close connection to the surface water. And unfortunately, what we have found in implementing this statute is that we have applications that make sense that pass the overall performance standard test but fail the prescriptive test in terms of what kind of aquifer it's in. In fact, it may be in a semi-confined aquifer, or it may be in a confined aquifer. And so what we're simply proposing to do to make this a little bit more usable statute is, on page 2 of the bill, line 2, is to simply delete the term unconfined. And finally, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in sections 4 and 5 of the bill, particularly in section 4, you'll see what appears to be a whole bunch of new text. And then in section 5, there's a repealing of a law from 2001. And what the department is proposing to do here is to simply eliminate a sunset clause from an existing law. And the existing law has to do with consenting to injury. And let me back up a step and explain what that means, is that in many cases there are good reasons for moving a water right point of diversion upstream. But in many cases, moving a water right point of diversion upstream would cause injury to an existing right. In other words, an existing user may not get the water to which they're legally entitled to. Could be a private citizen, or it could be an in-stream water right that's held by the Department for the People of Oregon. And so, having recognized that this problem existed several years ago, the legislature passed a law that under certain circumstances allows either individuals or the state of Oregon to consent to this type of injury. And if it's the Water Resources Department consenting on behalf of the people of the state of Oregon, we have to go through a number of steps. We need to get a recommendation from the state agency that requested that in-stream water right, number one. And number two, that state agency needs to tell the department that this change will actually provide a net benefit for the resource that's trying to be addressed by the in-stream water right. Let me give you a simple example. You may have a diversion that requires the construction of a push-up dam, the pushing up of gravel in the stream year after year to put water into a ditch. And that individual may request to move their point of diversion upstream 1,000 feet to take advantage of an existing diversion that doesn't require a push-up dam and has a fish screen on it. And if you look at that as a package, that would be the kind of scenario where consenting to injury would, in fact, result in a net benefit, perhaps, to the resource. So we're simply requesting that authority or that program and process stay on the books, and that the sunset for that provision be removed. Thank you. I should add, Mr. Chair, that, again, we've shared this concept with our stakeholders and find their general support. We're not aware of any opposition to those three provisions in this bill that I just described. Thank you.
Question?
Actually, I have Mr. Chair.
Representative Dinkfelder.
Thank you. Thank you, Adam. Sorry I was out in the hall talking to some of the presenters.
Could you just, on the water use registration, the Section 4 of House Bill 2083, in your notes, and I'm reading that you this was developed because of the concern for, you know, looking at restoration and stormwater management activities, which are still going on. So can you explain to me a little bit about why this is, how the change will affect those activities or not?
Sure. With the chair's indulgence, would it be appropriate to go back to House Bill 2083 and respond?
The chair will indulge.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Okay. Chair Jensen, Representative Dingfelder, I think the best way to describe that provision that was in law, that is in law, was kind of a Band-Aid, if you will, to the department's water right backlog in the early 1990s. It was a great idea at the time to make sure we weren't holding up these kinds of projects that couldn't wait for 3 years to get through the department's water right backlog. But since 1993, when that provision was established, there's been a lot of water under the bridge, so to speak, and a lot of things have happened. The department has eliminated the backlog, number one. We have statutory timelines for processing applications. And probably more important, Representative, is we have new tools. We have a limited license, which within 30 days would allow someone the authorization to do these sorts of things. And we also have an expedited process for storing water, which is often how people do sort of wetland enhancement or other activities. And so really with the new tools that we have on the books and the elimination of those other impediments, we find that this is something that has not been popular or used for many, many years.
Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair and Adam. And so neither...
We're back on 2123 then, right?
Although you had said that there were no objections on 2083 as far as the stakeholders as well, or
that's correct,
okay.
Representative,
thank
Mr.
You.
Chair.
Now we're back on 2123 members. Representative Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question, and I think I know the answer to it, but I'm not sure. I thought I'd ask it. In this conversation that we're having about unconfined, semi-confined, and confined aquifers, is this change a result of new knowledge of how water moves in the ground, or is it something else?
Mr. Chair and Representative Barnhart, if you look at House Bill 2123 on page 3, actually line 20, there's a term similarly there, okay? And that term, that's really the performance standard for whether we can allow one of these kind of transfers.
Okay.
And at the time the bill was written, I think an assumption was made that you could only meet that performance standard through an unconfined aquifer. But as we've had more experience with the provision and running the numbers and having proposals in front of us, we've found ourselves in the situation where an applicant meets the performance test but not the prescriptive test, and we've had to be in a position to deny the application, which we want to fix.
So, if I may, follow up. So, in effect, what you're doing is saying this is the result we want. We thought that this other thing described the nature of the quality of the ground in the area where that result was going to come. It turns out we were wrong about that, but we still do want this result.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's exactly correct.
Thank you.
Adam, in Section 4, 1A, you have deleted from previous language the time allowed by Water Resource Commission for computation of an authorized change may not be used when computing a 5-year period of non-use under the provisions of 540.610.1. Is the deletion there mean that then it now may be used?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is one of those things that legislative counsel does to keep me on my toes. And if you flip the page, and you look on line 38 of page 4, it's there, just in a different location. And I think kind of written in a way that makes more sense, I guess, for legislative counsel, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I see what he did.
Yeah. I see.
You just changed the listing system.
Yeah, changed the listing system.
Yes.
Appreciate you pointing that out,
yeah.
Adam. Any other questions for Adam on this? Okay. With that, Jerry Schmidt from the Oregon Groundwater Association. Good afternoon, Jerry.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jerry Schmidt, and for the record, I represent the Oregon Groundwater Association. Its members are mainly well constructors, pump installers, water treatment operators, scientists, consulting hydrogeologists, virtually anybody having to do with groundwater, and that includes manufacturing representatives and manufacturing suppliers. I just wanted to comment briefly. Adam asked if we had any objections to the bill, and we don't. Our industry is trying to promote the development of the resource to the point that it's protected and available for use without infringing upon other people's rights. Groundwater is a good alternative in many cases, trying to free up some of the pollution problems to surface water, just allowing municipalities, agriculture, the many other users of groundwater, and trying to lessen the impact upon surface water and the various things it produces. I don't have any objections. As I said previously, I listened to the consulting hydrogeologist yesterday with the Water Resources Department's advisory committee, groundwater advisory committee. There was two consulting hydrogeologists that had the chance to comment on the bill. They didn't have any concerns. My legislative committee hasn't looked at it yet, but taking what went on yesterday at the Water Resources Department, I can't see that there's an issue unless one of my members can bring it to me. I've had about 35 years in the water industry. I didn't see a problem, but there's many things that I don't see that other people point out to me. So with that, I just wanted to go on the record that we're generally supportive of anything the department can do to lessen the problems with administering a rather complex set of laws. With that, I thank the committee for its time, and if I'm available for questions at any point. So thank you very much.
Questions for Jerry? Thank you. Appreciate your time, Jerry. And then Doug Myers from Water Watch. Good afternoon, Doug.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Doug Myers, and I'm here today representing Water Watch. Water Watch is a membership organization that is dedicated to seeing there's enough water in Oregon streams for sustained fish and wildlife and recreation and pollution abatement and you name it. We appreciate the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2123. And I just want to, our main purpose, we do not object to the bill. Our main purpose up here is just getting on record that we want to be able to see the department and commission adopt rules that require documentation that the use in question in Section 1 for groundwater registration claims, use hasn't been forfeited or abandoned, and that the department review each amendment to assure the change will not injure other water right holders, including in-stream water right holders, or result in a net loss of water available to downstream users or an expansion of the claimed right. And we're okay with sections 2, 4, and 5. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from Doug?
just a clarification. I'm assuming then, since this is going to be supposedly addressed through rulemaking, that you'll be involved in the rulemaking process, and there'll be ample opportunity for public input through that process.
I see you're looking at Mr. Sussman, and I assume he's nodding yes.
He is nodding vigorously up and down.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And that concludes. Is there anyone that hasn't signed up that wants to comment on either of the two bills that we have heard public testimony? With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2123. Chair wishes to make a couple or one comment. It will generally be our procedure that we will not have a work session on any bill the first time we hear it. Like to, even for those consensus bills like we've had today, like to have a little time for the members of the committee to digest, think about, and also for the public, once they've heard about it, to get back to us if there's anything wrong. So while these seem like pretty much consensus bills, the reasons for not having a work session is our desire never to do that. Now, having said never do that, we all recognize that when we get down to the end of the session, we may run into time elements where it's important for us to do that, but we'll try to advise you when we're approaching that time, at least in the chair's mind, so that we can, and we'll also try to ensure that staff gets out the material to us so we've had a chance to go over it in some detail before we get to the committee meeting. Is there any other announcements for the good of the order, Sandy?
No, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, have a good weekend.
Thank you. You mean we have to take 2 days off?
You're welcome to stay here, Mr. Chair. Okay. We all go.
We could have weekend hearings on 2025. That's a consensus bill.
Hey,
by the way, the chair did note today that somebody did sneak a comment in relationship to 2025 in the first informational hearing that we had.
That
I heard the F word used in that. We have redefined the word here, but yeah, we are.